and summertime, and we heard a couple of tunes from a brand new album from Miles Okazaki, and it's a new album. It's called Work. We heard Brilliant Corners, and we also had Evidence off of that. And so the question is, what wonderful station would we be if we didn't exactly bring you, yes, Miles Okazaki. Hi, Miles. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Thank you so much for the impromptu request for an interview.
Yes, I'm happy to do it.
You know, so I have to tell you that I am, you know, really intrigued by your album. And I wanted to ask you, this is the question that I know you'll find a bit of a curveball because it's hard to really define yourself, but it's so scholarly. And so my first question is that where you come from with the music?
Well, okay, so scholarly, I guess I like to study, if that's what you mean.
I do.
I mean, I like to be thorough, I guess, when studying whoever it is, you know, whether it's, in this case, it's Monk, but it could be, it could be John Coltrane, it could be Bach, it could be anything. In order to sort of be respectful of that material, I guess. So, like, a lot of, you know, there's a lot of ways to play things, but if you play a Charlie Parker tune and you kind of just do it, you know, kind of close to how you think it goes or something like that, you know, I feel like, why not, you know, really dig in and listen to the various versions and see what's the same and what's different and try to understand what's going on a deeper level than just copying, you know.
So let's unwrap what you've done. So you've basically taken, is it every Thelonious Monk composition?
Well, there are some precedents here that should be cited, you know, in terms of being scholarly, as you said. The main reference is a friend of mine named Steve Cardenas, and Don Sickler put together a book about 10 years ago of, it's like a book of charts that sort of covers Monk's output. You know, there are a number of other tunes, three or four other tunes that are not included that are in Robin Kelly's biography, which is a great book I'd recommend. But those are not copywritten, or else they're improvisations. It's sort of ambiguous exactly how many tunes there are, but there's about 70, and I'm using the list from the Cardenas Sickler book as my reference list, not the charts. Totally, because I use the recordings really as my primary musical reference. But in terms of the historical, you know, compilation of how many tunes there are and all that, that's what I'm using. And then, I just kind of crossed off things off that list.
So, and, you know, I did an interview with somebody else not long ago. Her name is Victoria Williams, and she did something similar with Mary McPartland's music. And so the question I asked her is the same question, because many people that are listening are not musicians and don't understand all of the intricacies of looking at charts and things like that. So humor the, you know, the human in us, right? So the question I have is, do you look at these charts and are you playing exactly what's there, or are you improvising around those ideas?
Oh, yeah. Well, sometimes after gigs and stuff, people ask you, well, what percentage of that was improvised and what was written or stuff like that, which is a very hard question to ask. And it's usually like, if you really had to put a number to it, it would be somewhere in the 90s, you know, is what's improvised. And basically everything is improvised because you're talking about the way it feels rhythmically and all that stuff, which is not written down, you know. So, I mean, if you wrote down a James Brown song, you know, you wouldn't be able to get the feeling of it from that, you know?
No.
So in certain cases, the charts are very useful as a reference to get, like, I don't know, let's say that it would be kind of equivalent to a transcription of an interview where someone was talking really quickly or garbled or something like that, and it'd be hard to hear, but then the transcription can show you what was actually there. And then once you read what is in that transcription, then you can then hear what they said, or you say, oh, okay, now I can hear, you know, what that was, you know, even though it's all muffled or something like that. So there's a lot of old recordings of Monk, and some of the more obscure tunes that were only recorded once, where it's actually very hard to tell what's going on and some of the details on the recordings. And so the transcriptions, which are oftentimes use the original sheet music as a reference, those are very useful because the original sheet music, what Monk wrote, is what he gave to the musicians to play. And sometimes the musicians weren't quite able to even play what was written, so it's very interesting to know what his original intention was.
Yeah.
But I'm not a scholar by any means. I'm more of a musician, but I did take a little bit of that approach. I really wanted to know those kind of details and get them correct.
So I have, you know, questions around the actual album, but the next thing I want to know is, like, you mentioned something that I was going to ask you, right, which is, you know, Thelonious Monk, is his music is notorious for being really difficult to play. And, you know, it seems to me, and please feel free to tell me I'm wrong about this, that it would be a lot harder on solo guitar to me, you know, because the guitar is such a difficult instrument. Is that the case? I mean, did you have a hard time kind of walking through this?
Well, I did think about issues. Well, it's sort of like, in a way, it's a process of translation, like playing it onto a different instrument than it was originally written on. Like, if you're a pianist playing Monk compositions, and there is a record coming out later this year by a great pianist who is doing the same type of thing, but I won't release that information. It's not in my place to do that, but I do know about something like that, and I'm sure that challenge is different because you can't just play the way that Monk played. You have to do something different. Now, on the guitar, just getting the material to sound, just getting the rhythms and the pitches, you know, just getting the actual material translated onto the instrument already makes it sound different. So in a way, I consider it to be a little bit easier, you know, because I've already, the material itself has gone through this, like, filter, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. The filter is the guitar, is the instrument. So it would be like, I don't know, if you translated a book from another language, it's not quite like that because you don't get to just do whatever you want. But I think that my challenge is not so much in not copying Monk, because I can't do that anyway, but the challenge is more like trying to get the songs to sound interesting for the listener, you know, because it's a lot of them, and then they go on and on, so I wanted, you know, there's 70 of them, right, so I wanted to continue to be changing all the time, and on the guitar, it's a sparse instrument, it's not like the piano. Solo guitar is it can be, you know, after a while it can be like, okay, this is kind of like not much happening here, you know, so.
Well, that is not the listener's experience. I can assure you of that.
Yeah, well, I appreciate that. And I have models that I'm working off of to think about how to keep it interesting, you know.
Yeah, I mean, you know, to me, Monk, you know, again, not being a musician, it to me, it's always, I think about him like, you know, I can't speak French, but even if I could speak French, it wouldn't really be like understanding Monk, because Monk is kind of off. You know, he's always like two or three steps in a different direction, if you know what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. And so this is, you know, this is what draws people, I think, to Thelonious Monk at the end of the day, because, I mean, he is an icon in kind of composing in a way that was really unique and different.
Mm-hmm.
Is that what drove you to be interested in doing this, or what was the motivation?
The motivation is that, Monk is the reason I play music, really, in the first place. So, I mean, he's always been the number one for me. So, at some point, and I've always thought about doing a Monk project, you know. I mean, I'm talking about for 20, 25 years, you know, I've been thinking about it a little bit, you know. And then only recently did I think that I might be mature enough to actually do something and bring something to it, you know, in terms of my experience.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, certainly 10 years ago, 15 years ago, I mean, I might have physically been able to play all this stuff about as well as I can now, but I didn't have enough experience, you know. And maybe I still don't. I don't know.
Well, let me.
I happen to have the motivation to do it this year, and then I just sort of kept going, and then I was like, well, There's a lot of monk projects out there, so maybe doing all of the tunes would be something different than people have heard before.
For sure. Now, when you say maturity, do you mean in the, you know, the musical sense of the word, or do you mean experience? What are you talking about there?
It's hard to say because it's, you always look back at yourself in another point in time and think like, oh wow, I didn't know what I was doing then. So that may happen to me still, you know. I mean, I'm 43 now, so I'm sort of in the middle of things, but I don't think I had the confidence, probably, you know. It's more about just sort of, could I put something out, could I, this respects this music, this is some of the most important music made by, you know, African-American musicians or any musicians, you know, and from this country, you know, or from, I mean, as far as I'm concerned, it's like some of the deepest structures created by any human, you know, are these monk things, along with Bach and, you know, Shakespeare. So, like, when you yes. start to deal with these type of people, these type of artists, you know, I don't know, it's intimidating, you know. So it takes, I don't know, it took me a while to sort of feel like I could approach it, you know.
Yeah, no, and so let me tell everybody, it's 2:17 here at WPKN, and we are talking to, it is my pleasure to be talking to Miles Okazaki, who has a new album out. He has recorded many of the Thelonious Monk compositions, and he was featured briefly in a New York Times article on they do a playlist, which, by the way, is always a great disappointment to me, because the last thing will always be, you know, jazz. You know, it's like, what happened to the world that is the case, right? Because, you know, the New York Times used to be great when it came to reviewing jazz. And it just doesn't do it the way it used. But anyway, that's tertiary to what we're talking about. So let me ask you, how long did it take you to record this?
It took about a year, maybe a little less. I mean, it's hard to say. It's not just record, you know. It's sort of like there's different ways of recording, and the way I've recorded in the past has always been quickly, you know, because you're in a studio and you're paying by the hour, you know. So it's like, I actually have done, you know, I did a live record, and then my last two records before that were like just like basically mostly first takes in the studio and stuff like that. So this one, because of solo guitar, all I needed to do is buy some microphones, and then I could do it at home, you know. And I take it to somebody, an expert, who in this case, Liberty Ellman, a great guitarist, I'm not sure if you know him, and an engineer, and he mastered it and got everything kind of balanced out and everything like that, you know. Because my recording technique is a little uneven, I might have put the mics in different places over different days and things like that, But, you know, it was quite a long process because I really wanted each tune to have some depth to it, which means I had to sit there and meditate on it for quite a while. Mm. And by meditate, I mean memorize, practice it until it became something, you know, like an arrangement, and then record, you know. So yeah, lengthy process.
So walk me through this. So you, because I think this is the other aspect that I think is so interesting about this. This is really self-produced, right? And So did you do it in your apartment in Brooklyn? What did you do?
That's exactly what I did, in the basement. Yeah. There's not much production when you're talking about a solo record, except maybe the direction of the project, you know, the whatever the vision is, you know, however you want to present it. But in terms of technical production, there's nothing happening. It's just one guitar, one amp, two microphones, and no effects, and that's it, you know. So, and the challenge then, because I had to make that decision, I was like, well, am I going to change it up with different sounds and different guitars? I was thinking maybe I'll do some acoustic guitars, and then I'll do some things with effects and loops and all kinds of stuff. And I was like, you know, I'm just going to try to do it all with technique.
I'm so glad that you didn't, because I think it would have lost a lot. This is just my humble opinion. But, you know, so let me ask you, so let's walk through this. You went downstairs. You live in a building in Brooklyn, do you?
Yes.
Yeah, and so how did you keep other people from coming downstairs?
Oh, I have a little studio space.
Oh, nice. Okay, cool.
Yeah. I mean, it's not special, but it is a little space that I can have my stuff in.
And so you go down there primarily because you escape the outside noise of Brooklyn. If you were in your apartment, you would hear it.
Yeah, I have three kids, and I have a complicated life.
So you don't have actually an external problem. You first have an internal problem with sound.
Many internal problems.
Well, let's not get into that. We'll stay away. Terry Gross will get into the therapy place.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So did you self-produce this because you could, or is it really a financial matter? That you would have never been able to get a record label to record it, even though it's such a great thing at the end of the day. What's the story here?
Okay, well, I'll tell you the true story, which is that I am signed with a label, with a Pi Recordings label. It's a great label in New York, and they have an amazing roster. And they don't release that many records. They release like 5 or 6 records a year. And so in between projects is quite a bit of time, like 2 or 3 years, And I put out a record last year called Trickster, and did quite well and all this, and it was my original music. And I was like, well, what can I do in this intervening time? Like, I could be writing, but it's like, I need to do something public, to sort of keep some kind of momentum going. So I was like, well, I'll just do this Monk project. This will be like my in-between project, something that label wouldn't do. That label they're not going to release an album of cover songs. Like, that's not what they do. They release, sort of original music and all that. And so I talked with them, and they're like, yeah, cool, do it, And then, of course, it's almost six CDs worth of music, so no label would do that. Like, that would be crazy. I mean, for me, they might do it for somebody else who was more well-known, but for me, they would, they wouldn't put that, sink that kind of money into it.
Well, let me just add, not yet. Not yet. And will you be performing this?
Well, I have been doing gigs at this place in Brooklyn called Lunatico, which is a great little bar and restaurant.
Would you say that again? Because I don't know that place, and I know our listeners don't.
It's called Bar Lunatico, L-U-N-A, with a little accent, T-I-C-O. And I'm doing will actually be on Monk's birthday,
nice.
October 10th. So
what
I'll
time?
Do a little mini celebration of this record at that point.
Fantastic. When is that? What time?
Oh, that would be starting at 8:30.
Okay, cool. I know that a lot of people, me on the top of the list, will want to see that. And so before I let you go, I have sort of a personal question to ask you, which is, are you able to make a living completely as an artist, or are you needing to do other things in order to make the ends meet?
Well, I've gone through a few phases. I mean, I've been in New York now for 20 years, so... Mm-hmm. I've gone through phases of heavily touring, which makes a living, but then you're not home. And then, and then I've done teaching, and I still do teaching. I'm a professor at the University of Michigan, so I travel back and forth to there, and I tour quite a bit. I have a book out,
Fabulous.
Most of my work is for other people. I worked for many years with Steve Coleman of Five Elements.
Wow.
I worked for, that was sort of my previous phase that I, that was like heavy touring, and now I'm kind of not doing that so much. So what I'm trying to do now is just enter a new phase. And this was sort of my way of doing that, to sort of reconnect with this music that is foundational to me, and to feel like I'm making my way.
I saw you also did some work with Miguel Zinnan and also with Chris Potter. Great cred.
There's a lot of stuff in there. I mean, I'm not, you don't see me on the covers of magazines and things like that, but I'm not really too concerned with that. I just sort of try to make the best things that I can make, and it takes me a really long time. I'm very slow, and, over the, last 20 years, I've made 5 records, so this being the 5th one, if you call this a record, I'm not sure what to call it exactly,
it might actually require a different term. I mean, to me, as I said before we got on the air, Miles and I apparently both don't sleep, so 2 o'clock in the morning, I was reading the New York Times, and I saw that they had mentioned this, and it was intrigued by it, right? So I immediately went, I had to get my headphones because my partner was sleeping, put the headphones on, listen to it. It was like, I am interviewing this guy. I have to meet him. But I think this is a masterpiece. But the thing that really hit me was how well the New York Times got it. You know, they really did, because it's not exactly completely accessible music. You know, I wouldn't put it in the same genre as what they had in that playlist, for example.
Right. Well, you know, the playlist is all the different writers, and Giovanni's the writer there now, and he's very interested in, I mean, he has a wide breadth of stuff, but he's very interested in sort of cutting-edge stuff, and then this is sort of in between. I mean, it's traditional material, but I'm kind of an experimental player on some, you know, in terms of what I've been doing recently, you know. So I think that, yeah, it was a good little piece there. In terms of ex-writers for the New York Times, Nate Chinnan put a nice piece
on
WBGO, and that's quite a lengthy review there with some more samples and stuff like that.
So it's fabulous.
People check that out.
Yeah. No, I saw his quote, and I mean, I feel the same way about your music that he does. And I want to thank you, and I hope that this will not be the last interview, and that we'll have another opportunity to do this. And I will most definitely remind people about your upcoming performances. Can they go? Do you have a website? Can they go to your website and see where your tours are?
I do have a website. It's not totally up to date. I've been working on it.
Right.
The best way to really know what's going on with me is to follow me on like Instagram or Twitter, one of those two. And you just search for my name, you'll find those. But if you go to my website, milesokazaki.com, all the links are there to the various things. And the social medias and the videos, and there's a whole bunch of weird stuff on there too, so like, you know, drawings and things like that. So,
well, I thank you so much from the bottom of my little jazz heart for this beautiful album.
Well, thank you for contacting me. This is
good.
Great.
We'll do it again. All right. So, all right. Miles Okazaki, and he has a new album out. It's called Work, and it is the music of Thelonious Monk. And we are going to continue here with Ahmad Jamal. We'll be right back.